This is Corey Petty, reporting live from Mr. Yusuf Al-Amin's house. The date is 4-2-1995. We're here to talk about the 60s and how the Muslims were and how the Black Panthers were in the 60s and how life was with the Black Panthers, the politics, the society, and so forth. Mr. Yusuf Al-Amin. I understand you was a Black Panther in your time, in your day. Tell me, what was the life of a Black Panther in the
60s? Well, just to make a long story short, first of all, I wasn't actually a part of the Panther Party. I knew a lot of friends who were in the Panther Party. I myself took another direction and went to and joined the Muslims, not the Nation of Islam, but fundamental Muslims that call themselves Sunni Muslims, which is the last stop that Malcolm X made before he died, when he went to the city of Mecca and made his Hajj, and then he came back. He made some very profound statements saying that he was wrong about all white men being the devil, and that most people, you know, in other parts of the world, he had seen that the disease of racism that existed in America did not exist all over. And I myself found that to be true also, because when I went to Saudi Arabia to make my Hajj, as Malcolm did, I met several different European people. For instance, I met some people from the Netherlands who were white, but they had the same philosophy as all Muslims all over the world.
Right. I understand that the Muslims themselves had slaves back in the time. Is that true?
Yes, that was true. You have to understand the fact that slavery as an institution has always existed on the planet Earth.
Right.
The defining difference that we found in the 60s, when once we started to study it, we also found that the Arabs had enslaved Africans.
Right.
But the big difference between the enslavement of Africans from the Arabian point of view was that upon acceptance, if the slave accepted the religion of Islam, which is what the Arabs were pushing, that slave could become free. Not only that, within the doctrine of the Holy Quran, which is the governing book of Muslims all over the world, it specifically states that if you have a slave, you have to treat that slave exactly how you treat yourself and everybody in your family, which is a big difference from American slavery. In the enslavement of Africans in America, they were the slave was systematically stripped of all of his guidelines of life, family, wife and children, economy, education, and being in a strange land with no language, no communicative tools or anything like that. When the Arabs enslaved Africans, they permitted them to continue to have their culture and their understanding of life. If they did not want to accept the religion of Islam, they did not have to accept the religion of Islam and could keep their own. But as we do here in America, you still had to obey the laws that the Arabs had. So there was a big difference, and it was profound. And we found even in the 60s that there were those white factors that was relating exactly the question that you just asked, which is a very good question, because that is one of the things that the opponents of freedom continually use as a tool to divide. They use it to
it's a ploy that's used in every aspect of life, whether it be in business, whether it be in religion or anything. The divide and conquer is one of the greatest tools that mankind has used, and I'm not just talking about white people. I'm talking about mankind. The Egyptians, the Chinese, everybody, anybody that has ever controlled any aspect of the planet Earth has used this system of divide and conquer continually. I oppose slavery. You run back to me. Well, hey, man, how can you oppose slavery? Your own people enslaved you, and so on and so forth and so forth. And all these facts are true. All of them are true.
Right.
And one of the things that I found out from my experiences of the 60s was the fact that truth has no particular color. Truth has no... Truth has a double edge. It's like a double-edged sword, and it has its negative and it has its positive. And you, as the investigator, you as the observer, you as the being in the decision of truth, have to decide. I can't decide for you what truth is.
Right.
You can't decide for me what truth is. You must sit down, weigh it, evaluate it, and spit it on your own self, because that's the only way, and that's the only purpose of truth, is to strengthen you as the individual. So therefore, truth, as some of the poets say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Right.
And so is truth. So it is you who have to decide, even the conversation that we're having here, it is you who have to decide whether what I have related to you in terms of my life as a truth. I'm talking about it as a truth for me, but I'm not talking about it was a truth for anyone else to start out with. But there were, and there always will be, me, you, or everybody else is but an example of what life is about. Therefore, any opinion that you have, most likely there are others that have that same opinion. That's what the basis of polls and things like that are about. The poll doesn't take everybody's opinion, but if there was 20 people in this room, the poll would take 7 of those people's opinion, and then conclude that at least 4 or 5 more had the opinions of these 7, and they added up that way. So they get an imaginary figure. See, and this is very important, particularly you being very young. This is something that you must understand, that in this overwhelming society, the individual gets lost in his powers unless he has that deciding factor of determining what truth is for him or her. Blue, black, green, brown, sky blue, pink, I don't give a damn what you say, you know, that's where all of our lives evolve out of, is first of all, number one, numero uno, me. I'm the man. I'm the happening, and everything else around me, I'm making a decision about. So truth is in you, not me. Truth is in me for me. Truth is in you for you. You decide the truth. You decide what I'm saying, weigh it, and put it together and come up with some type of truth of your own. See, don't adopt my truth. Adopt your own truth based on all the facts surrounding it. And when the European is very proficient in doing this and using it for his own base purpose, and that is all good, like they say.
Right. European means the white man.
Right. I refrain from saying white man because because of the negative connotations that the Nation of Islam had put on it several years ago. And even in the autobiography of Malcolm X, Malcolm states that he's talking, when he says white man, he is not talking about the individual white man, but the group as a whole. See, which is a big, big difference. And if you don't understand that, you can end up being just as racist as those whites who are racist. Because then you start making your bases based upon a site where you see a white person, and automatically that white person is the devil. Now, that was the first stages. That was the second stage of Malcolm's life. But when he became a Sunni Muslim, he began to see that you have to make that decision based on experience. In other words, you cannot put a blanket statement on anybody, which is one of the things that black people have been living for a long, long, long time. Blanket statements. All black people are hoods. All black people are drug addicts. All black people, all black women are on welfare, and so on and so forth. All those are vast blanket statements. You'll find some truth in it. You'll find that there is some truth in it, and then there's some lie in it. So you have to make it on an individual basis. You run into a white cat, and he acts like a racist, and you confront him, and you say, "Yo, man, you acting like so-and-so and so-and-so," and then he comes back, and he says, "Fuck you, nigga," or so on, or whatever, you know, whatever the scenario is of a racist. Now you got one. And now you can say, that dude there is racist. But you can't say to the next dude that comes around the corner just by looking at him without you having the same exact experience again with this cat. You have a different one with him. And he says, "Oh, brother, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to come off like that. Or when I lived in such and such town, this happened to me, and this black dude did such and such to me. And, you know, that's why I'm, you know, thinking the way I'm thinking."
Growing by experience.
Right. You see what I'm saying? Then there's a big difference in that. So, and it took me many, 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 many years to learn what I'm telling you. Because in the beginning, I wasn't like this. And I made those blanket statements. And I, just like Malcolm, I made those blanket statements. And every white person that I saw, I hated them, you know. And I was preparing in the 60s, you know, to clarify just a little bit more, like in the 60s, I don't know what your perception or what people, many people's perception is, but the 60s was not all Martin Luther King.
Right.
The grassroots people like me, not famous, not being on TV and all that, we was into a different bag totally up in the north. Now, I can't speak for the south because I lived in New York City. But in New York City, we were like following Malcolm and listening to a lot of the things that Malcolm, me and my homeboys, there was one of my friends was going to all of the meetings and taping them and bringing them back on the weekend, and we would sit down and we would listen to the tapes over and over and over again, and then we would argue about it in our opinions, and we'd sit down and, you know, everybody, and that's another fact that you've got to get used to. And there's nowhere on the planet Earth that you're going to find everybody agreeing with everything that either you believe or they believe. So, but there is a range of unity in feelings, but never where everybody feels the same way about everything. And we used to do that with Malcolm. Some of us would sit down, some of us were like semi-integrationists, some of us was like, at one point I was like pro-integrationist, but we knew these topics and everything was the things that we should be discussing. You know, so it wasn't like everybody was just sitting down there saying, "Malcolm said this," and everybody agreed. Malcolm said that, everybody agreed. No, we discussed it. Some things we agreed with, some things weren't.
So Malcolm X gave you the encouragement to join the movement, didn't
you? Right, okay. Right. That because what kept me from joining the Muslims was my opinion about the white man being a devil. Going back into my past history, I had been raised as a Catholic.
Right.
And I had been involved with many people within the Catholic Church, the nuns and the priests, all of them was white. And I was totally indoctrinated with it.